All right, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, dear listeners, you are tuned to Trade Islam International. We welcome you once again to the car program, and joining us telephonically on the line today is Abdul Haq Katrada. Abdul Haq, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to my brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Morana. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to all our listeners out there. Jazakumullahu khair, Morana, once again for the opportunity. Alhamdulillah, we come into that. I don't know whether I should call it silly time of the year, but yeah, it's a wonderful time as well where everybody goes on holiday, alhamdulillah. It's silly because everybody tends to do everything, you know, without thinking twice. So, you know, let's just remind everybody out there that this time of the year we should be twice as careful as what we normally do when we normally drive on our roads. Not to say we're not careful when we normally drive on the vehicles, on the roads, but yeah, you know, just a suggestion or, you know, whatever it is, you know, we're taking a long trip, we're taking a journey, we're going on holiday, inshallah, you know, most people will be going on holiday, this is our major break, you know, make sure vehicles are all in order, inshallah, you know, all your necessaries, your extras that you need in the boot, you know, your triangle, we discussed the other day about the puncture, you know, that little can that can try and assist with the puncture, reflective vest, wheel spanner, a little bit of water here and there, this, that, the other, you know, all the little things. There's so many, I mean, if you go into, you know, all the newspapers and everything, alhamdulillah, there are so many reminders that this is, you know, some sort of thing that we should be taking along on a long trip. And more importantly, make sure that the car is in order, inshallah. You know, just, even if it's not due for a service, just take it in for a visual check, for a visual service. You know, even if it could cost you $200-$300 to have it checked, that might be worth the trouble, you know, inshallah, it will prevent you from standing somewhere on a dark road or something like that with the family. And the other thing, Molana, also we like to stress on the fact that, you know, if you're taking a long journey, we know that every 2 hours you should break your journey. That is actually, it's not a law, but it's something that has been a study, you know, that has been carried out. And after 2 hours of driving, a person tends to get very, very, how can I say, tired, and becomes difficult to concentrate and things like that. And importantly, you know, we can get to chow the patkos, Molana, you know.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the woman folk make lovely patkos, so, you know, we take a little break. You know, ease your legs out a little bit. Sometimes we need to relieve ourselves, all these sort of things. And they really, really do help if we stop every 2 hours, inshallah. So, you know, just take all these things into account, inshallah, when you're going on a journey.
Well, Jazakumullah for that. We continue. Line number 2, we have Brother Adil Mia. Adil, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mawlana. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And all the listeners, Jazakallah Musa for giving us opportunity again. Inshallah, Abdullah gave us a long speech there about the holiday checks already, so I think everybody will be geared up for the holiday, inshallah.
Jazakumullah. Alright, so this is your phone in program. Keep us a call to the number 011-854-1548. The SMS numbers 488-55 and 0825-808-0870. All right, we have our first question for tonight's program coming through. Abdul Haq, maybe you can tackle this question. The brother says that he's got a Chrysler, and he was told some time ago that you know, it's not a problem. You don't have to align the wheels because what he says is that he was told that it's fitted with some front toe adjustments, so it doesn't need any adjustments. Can you shed some light on this?
That is rather strange. I mean, it's new to me. I'll do my best, inshallah, maybe Brother Ali will be able to add on to this as well. But as far as the front wheel adjustments and alignments are concerned,
yeah.
I would say almost all vehicles are definitely adjustable as far as your caster, camber, and your toe is concerned, the toe in and toe out, as far as your tire adjustments, your wheel alignments are concerned. It's rather strange. What may have happened is, you know, it wasn't really out, and that is why they said, you know, they don't need adjustment on it. But to my knowledge, yes, I'm aware. The only thing I'm aware of is that most definitely it is adjustable, and it should be adjusted correctly. And that is why we always, you know, stress on the fact that go to someone that is reputable. It might cost you $100 more, but at the end of the day, you'll get a good job done.
All right, Jazakumullah. Adil, what is the average life of a serpentine belt or the timing belt?
The different motor vehicles have different lifespans on the timing belts. Mostly on the olden-day cars, between 90 and 100,000 kilometers. Some vehicles even 60,000 kilometers. But in today, modern-day cars, about 150,000 kilometers of Campbell Cane last year without any problem.
Okay. What about rust and corrosion? Can this actually cause the tensioner to stop in rotating freely, Adil?
Jim, what's up? The rust and corrosion can occur if the cam timing belt covers are not put on correctly onto the vehicle. So if water gets into it, then there can be a problem with the rust and corrosion. It can cause the effect on the timing tensioner and the rollers.
I've been taking the discussion further. We know that the timing belt is one of the most important belts in the car, because if the timing belt snaps, you're going to burn valves, you're going to damage your car. So what are the symptoms, some of the symptoms that actually typically indicate an automatic tensioner has now reached the end of the road, whereby you're going to have to change it?
Most of the motor manufacturers recommend that the tensioner and rollers be changed every time you change the timing belt. So basically, wherever you send in the car for a service, the timing belt should be checked. I mean, we've got to have it whenever a car comes in for a service, regardless of the kilometers, we always check the timing chain, we check the timing belt. Because you never know, you know, today with all the scams going around, people turning the clocks back on cars and vehicles. So you don't know exactly if there's a true kilometers the car's reading and the lifespan of the timing belt. So basically, always safer to check the timing belt, timing chain. And there is really no indication. Yes, there can be a noise coming from the belt when driving the vehicle or when the vehicle's idling. Like a more of a cluttering noise will come from the engine. That can give you an indication that the timing belt tensioner is on its way out.
Okay, so it's like in Sakana to go to change it.
Well, can I just add a little something onto that thing that Brother Adil has mentioned? The other thing is nowadays that we have with the newer vehicles, especially if you look at your Audis, your Peugeots, it is also recommended, because of the job and the effort that it takes to do the timing belt, the water pump should be replaced as well, because a lot of these water pumps run off the cam belt. And that always been recommended, and you know, with the newer vehicles, especially I recall very, very clearly Audi says that, and Peugeot says that as well. If the water pump is running off the cam belt, make sure you check that as well, and more than likely, you know, it's more preferred. I've actually taken this one step further myself, and I add that onto to the list of replacement of cam belt stuff. The other thing that also happens is, because your water pump is housed within your cam belt housing, if you have a water pump leaking and you tend to ignore it, that also would damage the cam belt itself. And the other culprit is the camshaft seal or the crankshaft seal. If there is any sort of leakage from within that seal, or if you look at the Toyota, the 4AE, the Kentucky Round, the Molana, you know them very well, the oil pump also runs off the cam belt.
Yeah.
And if any of that seals are leaking some sort of oil, then yes, you will have to repair that ASAP, because what happens is oil on the belt itself, it actually softens the belt, and belt tends to perish much quicker.
All right, lovely. Jazakumallah. Abdulhaq, also Brother Adil, some motoring news coming through today with regards to Volkswagen. VW announced today the biggest revamp in its history, cutting 30,000 jobs in a youth savings plan to help it, they say, recover from the Dieselgate emissions cheating scandal. So regarding this, we find, I think, worldwide it's going to be, they're going to be cutting 30,000 positions, including about 23,000 positions out in Germany. And I think what they say is that it's going to be a major step forward, and undoubtedly one of the biggest in the history of the company. So what's happening is jobs will be lost in Brazil, Argentina. These are two markets where the brand is really struggling. Let's take it further, inshallah. Number to call for the program, 011-854-1548, SMS 48855, and 0825-8080-70. We have Brother Adil Mia as well as Abdul Hakatara for the program. Give us a call.
Just to add on to the motoring news there, alhamdulillah, I just was busy looking at that sort of section, and I see that we're having some sort of, I wouldn't say relief as such, but yes, a drop in petrol price in December.
Yeah, they're talking.
That was expected, inshallah. So, yeah, you know, when going on holiday, we especially look forward to these things. You know, we always plot and plan our accommodations and everything else. But the petrol also hits us in the pocket. So, Maulana, that's some sort of relief there. The other news that has been running for a while is the 5.8 million vehicles that Toyota has a recall on with the airbags. I'm not too sure if South Africa is affected in any way whatsoever. I haven't come across anywhere that it has mentioned South Africa. But yes, if you do drive a Toyota, just double check what's happening there, because they had a particular brand of airbag that had a problem. And it had to be recalled because of some sort of component or something within the bag itself. If you do drive a Toyota, just check out, maybe go onto their website and check out if you do fall into that bracket. If the airbag needs to be looked at or whatever the case may be, under a recall, they should be able to repair it for you free of charge.
Okay. Jazakallah. Onto the question coming through, my brother. What is the functions of the RMI?
Brother Ali is a master on that.
The RMI is the retail motor industry, which actually protects the consumer and also basically the buyer and the seller. So whether you're in the motor trade or in the motor industry, what anything to do with the motor industry, the RMI basically acts between like a liaison officer between the mechanic or the workshop and the consumer. So basically, if you have any issues regarding a certain dealership or a certain technician or a workshop, you can always approach them, and they will arbitrate between you and the person involved. So basically, the benefit for those who are in the motor industry, it will protect you as a consumer and you as a workshop, and it also allows a code of conduct that you've got to specify in your workshop. So basically, to an RMI member, it's advisable that all consumers or the listeners out there, it is advisable to take your vehicle to an RMI approved dealer, because they have a code of conduct that they have to adhere to. That certain standards have to be fulfilled when you're taking your car for a service. So they basically, all the requirements have to be fulfilled, that they fish your car correctly, basically just like a dealership who will fish your car. So basically, in a nutshell, it is an advantage to the consumer and to the technician or the workshop involved with the RMI.
All right, Jazakumallah. After the question coming through, the brother wants to know regarding towing, you know, many going for the holidays, many might be towing this holidays as well. So whether it's a trailer, whether it's a boat, whether it's a caravan, whether it's a broken down car, we know that towing should be done right to avoid damage to the car and accidents on the roads. And what we find is that every December and January we have many fatalities on the roads. So inshallah, let's make sure that we tow responsibly and take it easy on the roads during the holiday season when we are going to be towing. Just some tips with regards to towing, Abdulhaq. What are the do's and the don'ts?
You know, it's very, very important as far as towing is concerned that you've got something decent to tow with. You know, you can't go buy a ski rope down the road in the shop and think now, you know, we're going to actually tow a vehicle with it. It's important that we have some sort of decent but proper appropriate tow rope for the vehicle, in the vehicle, all the time. Inshallah, Allah never will give us the opportunity to use it, but if we didn't, you need to use it, it is there. Obviously, the other thing is the vehicle that is being towed needs a driver who's a licensed driver who knows how to drive and has some sort of experience as far as driving is concerned. And the other thing is, I know everybody tends to skip by this one, and very, very importantly, the vehicle that is being towed should not have passengers in it. The vehicle that is being towed, that is part of the law, and fortunately for us at the moment, they're not really applying the law, but we should look at it very seriously. The vehicle that is being towed should not have any passengers in the vehicle. Only the driver should be present in the vehicle. Generally, it's not so easy. You know, everyone thinks, you know, we just pull this car, pull that car. Make sure you have the appropriate tools, equipment. As far as the newer vehicles is concerned, in the bumper, obviously you'll find the attachment in the boot. In the bumper, you find a little square piece that you're going to remove. You screw in the attachment into the place where the place where it's meant to be, and then only can you attach your tow rope onto it. Obviously, you can't carry a solid tow bar or something like that, because that's going to take up a lot of space in your boot. But you do get some of them nowadays that do fold up to very small. But I would suggest a very good, strong, decent tow rope. And
Before we continue, I want to ask Adil regarding a question coming through regarding Mercedes-Benz. But Abdul Haq, would you recommend the Y frames and the A frames to where you don't need a driver in the second vehicle?
Oh yes, no, definitely, most definitely. If you can get your hands on any of that, it would be very, 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 very advantageous for you, because then you don't need the driver in the vehicle. It's more stable. It's much easier for your braking, for pulling off, and all those sort of things.
So how does it work?
Very, very. Look, the A frames. I'm not too sure on the other vehicles, but as far as the A-frame and the Y-frame is concerned, I think I stand to correction, you need a tow bar on the vehicle itself, because that actually attaches onto the tow bar itself. the, you know, the vehicle that is towing, and the vehicle that is being towed has two sort of attachments on either side of the vehicle. I don't know how, well, I have never seen or been able to use the A-frame or a Y-frame on the newer vehicles where they have only one place for tow attachment.
Okay, anyway, let's take up a call on the line, line number two. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikumsalam warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Jee, my brother, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, shukr, how are you, Mullah?
Jee, alhamdulillah, wa shukrulillah. Jee, question?
I just want to ask Abdul Haq a question.
Yeah.
On a cam bell on a Toyota TS was done on 105,000 and then it was checked on 194,000.
Yeah.
And the car is on 250,000 now.
250.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it hasn't changed your timing belt for the last 145,000 kilos.
No, it hasn't. It was done on 105. They checked it at 194.
No, they're supposed to change it, my brother. Let's hear from Abdul Haq.
Okay.
See, Mahana, it is very, very important that you do change the cam belt, and I would suggest to the brother ASAP, because I've never, you know, alhamdulillah, it lasted him so long, inshallah, it should hold him until he has it replaced ASAP, though. Cam belts don't normally last that long, especially on the Toyotas as well, on the Tears, no matter whether you're traveling on a short distance or a long distance, as long as the mileage does come up, you will have to replace it. The other thing, very important, Manana, which we failed to mention, is that if a cam belt, and you're not doing the mileage, within a five-year period, within a five-year period as well, you've got to replace that cam belt. Because, you know, what happens is the rubber or the compound it's made of tends to somehow with time also lose its properties, and with the result, it could snap on you. Brother, alhamdulillah, you've been very fortunate. It was last done at 105. I would suggest that, you know, at 200, you should have had it replaced. What does tend to happen also, Mulana, sometimes is, you know, somebody takes a vehicle somewhere, they have the cam belt done, and they don't remember when it was done. And today, unfortunately, with time passing us by so quickly, said, no, I just had it last year, but unfortunately, it was 2 years ago. So, you know, it's important that you make a note of when the cam belt was replaced, and also a request when the vehicle goes in, you know, for your services to please, you know, check the cam belt, as well as when it comes to the 200,000 mark, ask for the cam belt to be replaced. You know, I always mention to everybody, you know, the guy says, no, you know, I need a service, but the cam belt needs to be replaced as well. At the moment, I don't have the money. I would suggest don't do the service, rather do the cam belt.
Mm.
Because with the service, you might not just get stuck, you know. But with the cam belt, yes, you can cost yourself a whole lot more money. So, Jibai, alhamdulillah, you were fortunate enough that your cam belt lasted you that long. I suggest you go and have it replaced. And as well, take a note of it as when it was replaced and the mileage it was replaced at. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, with mechanics, maybe they tend to forget or whatever the case may be. They need a reminder, you know, like Brother Andy says, alhamdulillah, he does it at every service, but everybody doesn't do it all the time. So, I insist that you request whoever it is that they look at the cam belt, and when it comes to 200,000, have it replaced.
Yeah, my brother, you have to change it ASAP.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah immediately, my brother. Jazakallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We continue. It's 7:34 p.m. Another caller. All right, caller is back, inshallah, on 854-1548. 0825-80-8070 is the number to call. Sorry, that is the SMS number. Adil, question coming through, my brother. It says, Assalamu alaikum. I just want to know, how often do you need to change automatic gearbox oil on the Mercedes Benz W203, and what engine oil should I use? M111 compressor engine. Adil?
Yeah, Mosaf, good question coming through. The gearbox oil, according to Mercedes Benz, is a lifetime transmission oil that they put into the vehicle. It should be changed once at 60,000 kilometers, and thereafter, not necessary to change it according to the manufacturer. But I feel it's necessary to change it, and it does make a difference if you change it again at 180,000. So basically, if the customer wants to, if he hasn't reached 180,000 or he's still reaching 180,000, it could be advisable that he changes it at 180,000 and replaces the filter as well. Good oil to use on his Mercedes 111 engine is a 5W40 synthetic oil. That's the one we use, and the one is recommended by Mercedes-Benz, which they also use. So that's the good oil to use. And in that engine, also any multi-grade oil will do the trick. But if you want to use a good oil, the 5W40, that's the one to use.
Okay. Adil, another question coming through my brother regarding the oil as well. The brother asking, should I use regular or synthetic oil with my oil change?
The synthetic oil is by far a better option. So if he's got the finances, the synthetic oil will be better for his engine.
But and the, if he's going to use regular oil, then he should change the oil more regularly. Then that means, for example, if he's going to use regular oil, then it will be advisable that he changes the oil every 10,000 kilometers. And if he's going to use synthetic oil, he can go between 15 and 20,000 kilometers. So it will basically prolong the oil change.
Okay. A question coming through via SMS saying, Salaam alaikum, please give me a value for a 1994 Hilux 2.4 diesel. It's got 240 on the clock. The vehicle has done only light work as it was a carpenter's van. No accidents, minor rust, full service history, no mechanical faults, very good condition. It's a short wheelbase. The seller is asking 30 grand. My brother, it's well worth it, inshallah. Adil, keep this comment, inshallah, regarding the 2.4 diesel Hilux buckies. How strong are those motors? Well, the price, my brother, with the service history, 94 Hilux 2.4, I think 30 is definitely worth it.
Brilliant vehicle, Malana.
Strong cars, eh?
Very, very good vehicle.
Jim, also the 2.4 diesel engine is basically what they term a donkey engine. You know, that thing can go forever and ever.
Okay.
And the advantage is very economical to service, very economical on diesel also, and parts are very economically available as well.
All right. So my brother, inshallah, what we say is 30 grand for a 1994 model Bucky short wheelbase. It's well worth it, Adil.
Gee, well worth it, Musa. That's a steal.
Yeah, it's a steal, you're right. It is a steal. Jazakumullah. 7:37 p.m. The question coming through is, what happens? I was driving the other day, the brother says, and the check engine light came on. It was just as he was about to enter Indonesia. He hasn't driven the car since then. What should he do? He had some ghee. What should he do?
See, Musa, the check engine light is, I think, a nightmare for most motorists.
Yeah.
It's been now a nightmare for most technicians and mechanics, because for every small thing, that little check engine light will come on. Basically, in a nutshell, the little check engine light is to advise or to warn the driver that there is something going wrong in the engine. There's so many sensors that are attached to the engine in a modern-day car, and those sensors all work together in conjunction to tell you that the engine is running efficiently. So basically, if it picks up any slight deficiency in the running of the engine, it will put your light off, light on. Even on some vehicles, even if you leave the fuel cap slightly open, is going to put a light on, because in Europe and in the States, in countries where the emission level rules are higher than our country, that's why they put all the sensors. So as soon as that light comes on, it's to alarm you that your emission level is going to go out, because on those countries, they do a mock test where they test your emission levels every year. They have a little sticker to put on your windscreen, and if your emission levels are too high, they actually fine you. So basically, that check engine light is a good idea to have it checked. But my recommendation to the listeners and people who drive this modern-day car, if the light comes on and you feel that your vehicle has been affected, like starts idling funny or starts pulling funny, then have it checked. But if you feel the vehicle still running normally, then you can prolong it. But don't prolong it too long so you can occur more damage to the engine.
Right, Jazakumullah. Call on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Sheena brother, how are you?
Yeah, alhamdulillah, man. We got a Hyundai. And while we're moving on the road, the power just cut off.
Which Hyundai is it? Which Hyundai?
Hyundai.
Sorry, my brother, you're breaking up. Hyundai accent.
Then the mechanic told us that first, he told us the crank sensor is gone. He made us replace that. And then afterwards, he said the battery is faulty. And we changed the battery. And then after that, they said that, no, the fuel pump. And then we changed fuel pump. And took my thought in changing it in the taxi. But then it's still in the same.
My brother, you're breaking up a little bit. Let's hear from Brother Adil, inshallah. Adil, you got a question, my brother?
Jim, what's up? On the brother's Hyundai, you see, he might have an intermittent problem. It doesn't occur all the time.
Yeah.
So basically, the mechanics who tried on the vehicle, they totally went to a process of elimination, understand? Because to fix a problem is to find a problem which is not there all the time.
It's difficult.
Very difficult. It's a nightmare for most mechanics and for most customers, because it's frustrating that you got a problem and then there's nobody who can assist you to help you with the problem. So you must remember that if a customer's car comes into the workshop and it has got an intermittent problem and the problem does not represent itself in the workshop, it's difficult for the mechanic technician to actually resolve the problem. So basically, in this case here, the mechanic has tried to eliminate the possibilities, like he changed the crankshaft angle sensor, he changed the fuel pump, because those are the possibilities that can cause the car what the car is doing. So inshallah, in that way there, hopefully that the problem will be resolved. But the only issue is that, you know, it can be a costly affair, because it's not a thing that can be cheap, you know, because replacing parts that you don't even know is the problem, it can be a costly affair. The other thing I can advise the customer is you rather leave the vehicle with the mechanic, maybe for a couple of days, and let the mechanic drive the vehicle around, and then maybe if it occurs to the mechanic, then probably you can repair the vehicle for him at a much cheaper cost, and you can probably pinpoint the problem for him immediately.
All right, I'll get JazakAllah for that. A question coming through, Abdul Haq. My car is running hot. My top hose is hard and hot, but with the bottom hose is cold. Kya kare? What to do?
Kya kare, Mulana? You know what? Just change the pipes around. No. See, Mulana, that is rather a symptom of possible few causes, but more than likely your thermostat is where the problem is, because what is happening is there is a lack of circulation in the system. What happens is at a certain temperature, roughly around the 80 degree mark, most thermostats come into operation. The thermostat is there simply to allow the vehicle to warm up quick enough, to become efficient quick enough. And what happens is if it is blocking up, then most definitely you don't have a circulation in the system. And, you know, it's best, you know, we have the remove the thermostat from there. Have it, you know, you can actually check it. Well, nowadays it's difficult to take it out yourself. But have it taken in and let your mechanic check the thermostat if it's operational. If it's operational, then obviously, you know, he's got to look at some sort of blockage in the system or whatever the case may be. But 9 out of 10 times, the thermostat is more than the culprit on that sort of situation. The other thing, when I'm talking about the thermostat, while we're there, you know, in almost all modern-day vehicles now, the thermostat is no more just a thermostat, you know, to allow for quick heating up. What happens is the thermostat has got an additional little piece in the back of it, which allows for a certain port to actually close up. So if you take out the thermostat and throw it away, you can end up also with an overheating problem, because obviously what is happening, that port that should be closed is now taking most of the water, so you can also get heating up problems from there. So yeah, look at the thermostat, look at the radiator. If the radiator has a blockage in it as well, you can have that problem. The other thing is, you know, I had a case a couple of days ago where someone, you know, had a problem with the radiator leaking, and they threw what you call block leaks into the thing. You know, that block leaks can only assist in a very, very small, tiny hole. Something like that, it's fine. But if it's got a big hole in it, or it's, you know, anything a little bit, I would say, you know, maybe even a couple of millimeters, then obviously you cannot patch that up with something like block leaks. And what does tend to happen also is that people then tend to throw two or three bottles into the system, and with the result, what happens is it blocks up the radiator, it blocks up all the little water ports and things like that, and you can end up doing more harm to your vehicle by putting too much of that in the system. So, you know, if it's got a small, very slight, you know, sort of drip kind of leak in it, it's fine. Maybe, you know, you can put a bottle in and get yourself to where you need to get to. But I wouldn't recommend that you throw a couple of bottles in if you've got a couple of millimeters hole in your radiator or in the system anywhere whatsoever.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to the caller G. Question coming through. Number to call, we have approximately 10 minutes before we terminate the program. 8541548 is the number to call. The SMS is 48855 and 0825808070. We're waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. Okay, the question coming through, very important question. It says, can you advise me on the new towing? He's talking about the towing of the trailers and the weight restrictions, the regulations regarding drivers with P license, it says, code 8, I think it's 8 license. And with which code license are you allowed to tow a trailer and a boat together? Adil.
Jim, what's up?
The brother can take us with, we'll drive for him, Adil.
Jim, before
I drive the boat,
the most important thing, after Abdullah spoke about towing a trailer, the two important things to check on a trailer, actually three, is the lights in the back, park lights, brake lights, and indicator lights. The other most important thing to check is the wheel bearings. The wheel bearings should be checked regularly.
Yeah.
Because you must remember, the trailer stands the whole year, and you hardly use it, and you use it once a year. And most of the time, you see when people are towing trailers, they got a puncture on the side of the road because the tires get frail, and they don't have that effect anymore because they stay on one position all the time. And when you start towing it, you get a flat spot on the tire.
Yeah.
So very important, the tires, the wheel bearings, and the lights in the towing, right? That's what I wanted to make mention of. Okay, once I come into the towing, there are a few you get on... to tow your trailers. I mean, you get a B license, That means from 3,500 kilograms until less than 3,500 kilograms to 750 kilograms, you can tow your vehicle. Then you get the C1, it's less than 16,000 kilograms, and then the EB. I mean, for most of the guys who want to tow their vehicles or their caravans or larger boats, they're going to need an EB license.
Oh.
So it's either the B or EB you're going to need. The other one is all for trucks, the EC and EC1 and EC. That's for big trucks and trailers. We're not going to worry about that one. So basically, people who are towing their vehicles, they're going to need a B license and an EB license. Now, before, I think the guys who went for licenses before the K-40, what you call this new one, the K-47. The
K-53.
Yeah.
The K-53.
So basically, if you went for that license, you automatically got the EB license.
Yeah.
If you look at your license, you went with a normal car, but they issued you an EB license. Now, today, if you go for the license, they will not issue an EB license. They'll issue you a B license. You understand? So you can only tow a normal trailer with less than 3,500 kilograms. So above that, you're going to need an EB license. If you tow in a caravan and all that, you're going to need a higher license.
Okay, jazakumallah. Just a reminder to our listeners as well, if you're going to go fishing with your boat, then tell listeners, as you're coming to the dam, many dams are asking for the skipper's license, and make sure that your boat has the buoyancy certificate. Many people were chased back or turned back because some boats did not have the certificate.
Just coming back to the licensing part of the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, with the new regulations regarding when you're going for your driver's license for renewal, they're going to now ask you for a proof of residence. If you don't have that, they're going to turn you back. That has been a new, I mean, a lot of people are up in arms about this thing, but that is a new rule or a new law that has come into play. So whenever you're going to renew your driver's license, don't forget to take along your proof of residence. Otherwise, you will be turned back. And I've seen people experience, and I've personally experienced that as well. And I was just reading up a whole write-up on the thing. Obviously, people are up in arms and things like that, but you know they're trying to upgrade and update the innate system, and that is now have become part of the requirements as far as that
is
concerned.
All right. Other question, my brother, with regards to a Ford Explorer, it says when the engine gets warm, it stalls and will not start. Have to let it sit for a few minutes, then turn it, then it'll start and run for a little while, but then it dies again. What could be the problem? It makes it act like it's vapor locking.
Yeah, there could be, you see, like coming back to the thing, all the diagnostics will have to be done, Mossad, to actually give you the exact fault on the vehicle. So basically what you say it is correct, it could be a fuel problem, or it could be a sensor problem, or it could be a coil problem, so there could be a lot of things linked to that problem. So you see, on a modern day engine, it's difficult, Mossad, to actually give you a true diagnostics of what the vehicle is.
Yeah.
Explorer, there is a diagnostic socket that can plug in. It will make the diagnostics easier for him or the technician doing the test. But that car will have to be booked into the workshop and be checked before they can give. But the main culprits are, like you say, the fuel vapor can cause it, the fuel pump can cause it, the crank angle sensor can cause it, the coil can cause it. So they're basically a lot of things linked. One of the sensors can cause it that are linked to the engine that make this car run.
Okay, jazakumallah. What happened with regards to the Nissan Titas? You know, where is the fuel pump situated? I think it's at the petrol tank, am I correct?
They're in the petrol tank themselves.
And how often do you have to change it?
The fuel pumps, normally, if they don't trouble you, you don't bother with the fuel pump itself. because it's basically you've got to remove the back seat. Under the seat you have a little cover. And once you remove that cover, you can actually screw off the cap that holds the fuel pump in place. Look, we haven't really had a problem as far as those are concerned.
Mm.
The Nissan Titas themselves. But there are other vehicles that I wouldn't say regularly, but tend to give about a few problems, and one of the culprits there are the Opel Corsa Buckies that I notice more often than not the Opel Corsa cars themselves as well. Then also with your BMW and the 3 Series, I've had a couple of those but you know, I wouldn't say they're problematic and you know, don't go buy the car because of that. But the fuel pump is a fuel pump. It's a wear and tear item. It can happen anytime, anyway. Some of them last a lifetime. But on the Nissan Titas, alhamdulillah, I haven't had a problem yet. I haven't heard of any yet. But we are basically where it is situated.
Okay, lovely. Jazakumallah. The question coming through regarding the 2015 BMW 320D Motorsport. The brother says they're asking for approximately $390, I think possibly might be a fair price. But he wants to know regarding the 2015 BMW 320D, Ali, what kind of cars are these?
Before I answer the question, when you asked me early on about the RMI, for our listeners out there, if the person you're taking your vehicle to, or anyone, can be an RMI member or non-RMI member, the motor industry of South Africa offers an ombudsman service as well.
Yeah.
So if you have a problem with anyone you dealt with, or you were unfairly treated in the motor industry, like, for example, if you bought a vehicle and you felt the vehicle wasn't to your specifications, or you took your vehicle for a service and wasn't repaired to your specifications, or you felt you were charged too much, so there's a motor industry ombudsman. So he will adjudicate the matter and give a finding. So basically, he will hear your side of the story, he will hear the dealership side of the story, and he will give a finding. So basically, that's also a number handy to have for listeners out there who have occurred or have come across a problem which they have encountered with one of the dealers or one of the workshops. Also, coming back to the BMW 1500i, brilliant engine. The engine design, I can't tell you that they really improved on that engine. The efficiency of the engine, the power of the engine, and the fuel consumption. It's an excellent vehicle. Today, all late model diesel cars, remember, these manufacturers daily, they upgrading and advancing on the technology of diesel engines, even petrol engines, because you can see today with a 2-liter turbo engine, what kilowatts you can pull out, what power you can pull out, and what fuel consumption. So basically, in the olden days, if you had a V8, and then you were the man on the street. Today, with a 2-liter turbo engine, you can eat up a V8, and you can use even half or three-quarter less petrol than what you can use. So basically, technology is moving rapidly, the modern-day engines also. But with all the rapid technology and all the things, it's even getting more difficult now to replace these vehicles. But then, end of the day, that's how the technology is going on.
Okay, Jazakumullah. Brothers, we're going to have to terminate the program. Before we terminate, inshallah, I was reading up the history of the double cab buckies. Basically, in a nutshell, very interesting how they formed the double cab buckies. Basically, the story goes that the body stand in its most primordial form was a result of a 1932 letter from a farmer's wife in Victoria to Ford Australia, asking for a vehicle to go to church in on a Sunday, and which can carry their pigs to the market on the Monday. So this guy's wanted the car, and this is how they designed, Ford Australia designed the first double cab for this guy. Very interesting. Anyway, Jazakallah for the program, Abdul Haq and Adil Mia. Inshallah, we talk soon, my brothers.
Inshallah.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah to the listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.